made a huge upset.
Your 2021 Eastern Conference champion.
Let's have it.
Hello, everyone out there in Tampa Bay and beyond. This is James Knowles coming at you for the RBLR Sports Podcast. I am here tonight to cover the Rowdies, and possibly you can hear that I have lost much of my voice. Anyway, we're going to try and skip past that as best we can. Carlos, how are you doing this evening?
James, I'm well. I am tuned into the Colombia-Switzerland penalties on another screen at the moment. Not a great result this weekend to talk about, or a great result yesterday to talk about for the U.S. soccer fans like James and myself. James lost his voice, apparently. We are struggling through the world of soccer the last couple of days, but the Tampa Bay Rowdies are still in first place. Still got stuff to talk about. World Cup's going on. And we play Naples this week in a game that is kind of just for bragging rights at this point. We'll talk about that more later on. But lots to talk about. Have a random friendly against Orlando tomorrow, which was kind of like not been talked about at all by the Rowdies officially, but has been confirmed by Orlando. It's like a MLS coming back, just friendly matchup that Orlando is doing for their season ticket holders. So I guess you can keep an eye out for that on social media. That's happening, for what that's worth. Not really a ton to talk about there other than that it's happening, weirdly enough. James, we're hanging in there. Other than your voice, are you doing well?
Not particularly, but we'll get into that. We'll get into that later, obviously. Let's go through everything. Unfortunately, as Carlos alluded to, Lexington beat us on the 4th of July game. That's not generally, I think, what we are used to seeing as Rowdies fans. And obviously, it was a bit of a bummer this past weekend, especially the result. It was 4-1. Kind of surprising to see. We'll get into all of that. I don't know that I have all of the best takes on it or all of the best analysis, even though I was there, because it was just, yeah, it was a bummer, obviously, as I said. But Lexington beat us, and we'll have to talk about that as best we can. And the next game that we have coming up this Saturday is a USL Cup game against Naples. Personally, I expect to win, and I will get into why later on. But if you do have any time in your schedule this Saturday, get to the game this weekend. It would be good to help the Rowdies make sure that they secure first place in their Florida group of the USL Cup and beat Naples again, because I don't ever want to not beat Naples. And we'll keep that record up, hopefully, after Saturday.
Yeah.
Like and subscribe to us on YouTube or any major podcast platform. And of course, please follow RBLR Sports on all your social media at RBLR Sports. And you can see us talk about the Rowdies in addition to the World Cup stuff.
I'm gonna see us glancing over at another screen now that Colombia missed a penalty and Switzerland stepping up. Sorry, not to interrupt you there, Jim, but big things happening in the world of soccer all over.
That's right. That's right. So I'm going to get us through this quick recap, and then I will turn it over to Carlos to do a lot more of the talking here. And then we can hopefully get through this whole recap of the Lexington win.
For the record, I think you sound great, James. I love your voice. It's still hanging in there, even with the loss of the voice.
As best we can. The starting 11 this past weekend, Jamali Waite, Dion Acuff, Leland Archer, Nathan Dos Santos, and Charlie Ostrom were all at the back. Sebastian Cruz and Max Schneider in front of them, with Luis Perez, Mateus, and Russell Cicerone as the attacking midfielders, MD Myers up top. Unfortunately, Lexington scored early, and they scored often. A missed penalty obviously did not help us out here, because at that point it would have been 2-1, and I think the game would have been a lot closer than getting away from us. I think anybody who's, let's say we're recording this on a Tuesday, anybody who's Egyptian can tell you how much closer a 2-1 is than 2-3-0. So that's one to throw out there. And we just never got back into the game despite a goal in the second half. So that was the way that it finished, ultimately 4-1. Over in the Eastern Conference, the Rowdies still are top. And in fact, we're overall still tough, but the gap is just narrower. The Rowdies have 31 points. The Battery have 26. Detroit have 24. Lou City also have 24. Indy have 21. Pittsburgh have 20. Over in the West, Orange County have 27, and they are closer to us, obviously, with that. San Antonio have 25. New Mexico, 21. Oakland, 21. Colorado Springs, El Paso, and Tulsa all have 19 points. So it's a little bit closer out in the West, at least in that little bubble there. In our own standings, I don't know if we got all of the predictions out ahead of this game. So Eureka State on 23 points. Carlos is second with 19. Connor, our writer, has 17. I have 15. And Parker, our other writer, has 14. Again, pretty close there after Eureka, who is leading the pack. So, Carlos, as I said, I would like to turn it over to you to get us started here on the longer version of our recap. Yeah. Tell me what you thought of this game, and in particular, how the Rowdies played, obviously, how the grand thesis that you have for this one.
Well, the grand thesis, I like that. Well, the big takeaway is that the lead that we had that felt insurmountable, impossible for any team to catch up, is definitely narrowed. We're up, like you said, we're up 5 points on our nearest rivals, Charleston. We sit on 26 points. Detroit has a game in hand on 24 points. Let's assume they win that game in hand. That lead that we had was like 12 points almost a few weeks ago. Granted, there was a few games that we played extra. That was that's come and gone. And we can assume that if Detroit wins, that that lead will shrink to 4 points. It's we're still in first place. We've only lost two games all year. It's incredible. We're still playing great soccer, and I don't think we should be panicking just yet. It was a bad, I mean, it was a really, really bad game. It was a really, really bad game in our last loss as well at home. I was hoping that the win at Brooklyn would really kind of get rid of the bad, you know, juju we had from that kind of ugly loss against Hartford. And then we had this follow-up loss against Lexington. Uncomfortable, certainly, for a team that has just seemed to win every single game, like, ever this year. Uncomfortable, but not a cause for concern just yet. I think this game against Naples, not to get ahead of ourselves and talk about the game this week, is a great opportunity to bounce back and really kind of get the vibes back, even though it might not mean a lot. And again, we'll talk about that in a little bit here. Other than really just bragging rights. Okay, so let's talk about the game a little bit more specifically. The lineup was interesting. You went through. Mateus got another start here. Cicerone was back starting, which was nice to see after his coming back from injury. Unfortunately, he probably didn't have the game he would have wanted to, noting the missed penalty, of course. I think if you make that penalty to make it a 2-1 deficit instead of continuing a 2-0 deficit, you could be looking at a different game. Who else? It was interesting. The back line, Leland Archer making his way into the starting lineup now after Brian Schaefer went down with a groin injury. He'll be out for a little bit. Timeline TBD. But in theory, great to have Leland Archer, one of the best defenders in the league over the last number of years, come in to take that spot. On paper, that sounds like an incredible luxury. In practice, it was not this week, unfortunately. Leland did not have a great game, but again, we'll talk about it a bit more in a minute. It's just pointing him out that we're talking about him. James, you mentioned it. Lexington came out strong. They just looked like they were on fire. They came out with their heads on fire, and they were ready to play. And the Rowdies just were slower to the ball. Like, we lost every 50-50 ball. We came out against an opponent that just seemed much more ready than we were. I think this was one of the games that's so much more like mental than tactical, right? I can't really attribute anything else to it. Tactically, the lineup looked great. It looked like one of our stronger lineups, and we just were sleepy. By the way, I'm looking on my other screen. James, you might be ahead of me on the stream. Switzerland stepping up to take penalty number 5 if they make it.
They're stepping up for me. Yeah.
Okay, hold on.
We're on the live coverage here, but...
Banger of a penalty. Did I spoil anything? Yeah. Well, this is important. We're live. This is live coverage at its best, because we're talking World Cup.
Doing a better job of the commentators, I would say.
Waiting for James's reaction.
Well, there it is. There it is.
There it is. Switzerland knocks out Colombia. Dude, what a game this was, by the way. Unexpected. I thought Colombia was going to go into this game and like comfortably beat Switzerland. They've been playing so well. Okay. World Cup aside, back to the Rowdies, now that we saw that one out of the way. I don't know if I can attribute this to anything else, James, literally other than like a mentality thing. Like, we came out slow, and by the time you dig yourself into a hole, it's 2-0 that early. Most dangerous lead in soccer, sure, I'll give you that. But when a 2-0 lead turns into a 3-0 lead, then it's like, okay, well, you know, I don't really know what you can do about that. This game was 3-0 by halftime, James. And it was all like mental mistakes. They were silly goals, really. Except the last one. That last finish was incredible. The fourth goal, I like seemed to put that away. But I mean, it's because we were pressing up and whatever. It was just, you dug yourself into a hole, and by the time you tried to find a way to dig yourself out, you kept shooting yourself in the foot. And the biggest example of that was a missed penalty, right? I mean, you couldn't do anything about that. You can't do anything more other than get a penalty and put yourself back into the game. And we missed it. Unfortunate for the Rowdies. I just don't think they were ever in a position where they could fight their way back. I mean, we have the players for it, but I think we were kind of mentally checked out by the time we were down 3-0 at halftime, right?
Yeah.
Almost impossible. Like, there's a reason a two goal lead versus a 3-goal lead is huge. And if you're at home and you have all this energy and you're ready to play for your crowd and everything, and the air of the stadium's immediately sucked out by halftime, I don't know what to do. If Ralph's mob was like, you know, as quiet as I've heard it in a long time, just because, like, what are you going to do? You're down by 3 at halftime. You go into the second half, you're just waiting for some sort of spark of life. And VV provided that in the 78th minute when he got subbed on and scored that goal. Nice finish from him. But as we pushed up to try and get goal number 2 and goal number 3, it's Scott for Lexington that has an incredible finish and whatnot to make it a 4-1 game. We could break down the goals Lexington scored, like, specifically if you'd like, but I mean, it was just bad all around. It was on the first goal, unlucky. Like, it was multiple players stepping up to the Lexington player dribbling through, just not getting a strong enough tackle on him and letting him run right through you. Eventually, it falls to Zenge, who puts Lexington up 1-0 in the 12th minute. And literally minutes later, James, literally minutes later, they come right back down the field and score in the 14th minute.
Yeah, being there, it was almost like you couldn't, well, maybe it wasn't exactly the same level, but it was one of those games that you just see that you're like, is this really happening? Am I actually witnessing what Lexington is doing right now? Is there some sort of fever dream that I'm a part of and everybody else around me?
I was like, I didn't really understand what was going on. I was like, maybe I had too many of the $3 Michelob Ultras that they were selling.
Those plus a dollar hot dogs.
Yeah.
Mess you up.
I was bamboozled. Zenge ball, like, over the top. Dos Santos comes out for it and just, like, is in no position to come out for that ball. Leland Archer is caught kind of in no man's land between two Lexington attackers. And Goodrum is the one that escapes. Leland Archer is nowhere near quick enough to catch up with Goodrum and Firmino. And they have the easiest two attacker on a goalie, you know, finish they've ever seen. Put the square, good run to Firmino. There's nothing Jamali Wade can do other than sprint as fast as he can across the box and try and get his hand to it, and he doesn't. This was a game to forget for the back line, of course. When you concede 4 goals, it's pretty easy to say that. I think one of the things I'm concerned about is just, like, Leland's ability to adapt to a full 90 minutes. He just looked really uncomfortable, really slow. The back line as a whole just looked so off. And maybe we're using him as a scapegoat here just because he's the new face on the back line, right? And maybe just the whole line as a whole played awful this game, which is true. But he just looked, I mean, he just looked a little bit behind in terms of fitness, maybe. I don't know if that's the right way to describe it. Unfortunate. Whatever. Next occurrence, Cicerone misses a penalty. Would make it 2-1. Maybe changes the dynamic of the game. Certainly changes the dynamic of the game. All air of the stadium is vacuumed out by that point. And then Lexington scores goal number three right before halftime. USF legend Marcus Epps, just an incredible dribble, leaves Leland in the dust with a little fake, little feint to the left. And it's over. That's the game. Like, it's done there. If it wasn't done when Cicerone missed the penalty, it's certainly done by halftime when Epps gets that goal on the goal archer. Not even really worth talking about Lexington's fourth goal because we're pressing so high up to try and make anything of it. So I wouldn't read too much into it other than it's a beautiful finish by their attacker. Just insane. And I'm not sure if there's a lot of positive takeaways in this game other than it's over and done with and hopefully never happens again. This is not one you want to lose. Like, we had an easy-ish kind of stretch of schedule coming up, which would have been nice, and I would have included this game in that. In games that you like probably should win, stack some cushion in the lead you have at the top of the table. This is one of those games I think you should have won to cushion your lead. And like I said, that lead shrinking now. It's going to be a bit more of a grind now if we get to this back half of the season. So let's keep winning the games we're supposed to win and not do this again because we're going to have actual tough games left. You have away to Orange County. You still have Louisville at home. We're going to have away to San Antonio, who's playing great, great soccer right now. You have to go away to Indy still, I believe. Yeah. Who are all playing great soccer. I think those are four of the toughest games left. Those are the games that you like want to be in a position to say, those are throwaway. If we lose, we lose. But the games against Lexington at home, you know what I mean? Like, those are the games you really need to take advantage of. And we have for the most part. It's unfortunate that I think kind of like the lapse in the concentration came against Hartford and Lexington, because I think at home, both of those are incredibly winnable games, incredibly winnable games. But as you go into this back half of the season, you really got to put some emphasis on winning those easier, quote unquote, games. As we get into the tougher run of those particularly difficult four teams I mentioned, those fixtures coming up, those away games. Yeah, I think that's kind of like my rant on this. I think that's everything I really need to say about this game, James. I didn't let you talk at all. Maybe it's for the better with your voice right now. You can rest up and give us your take on the U.S. men's national team in a little bit. But what else can we say about this other than let's throw it away and keep winning the games we're supposed to win, because we didn't do that this weekend.
Yeah, I want to go to the post game with Coach Dominic Casciato just for a little bit here. I think that our producer, Eureka, good as he is with all of our stuff here, put some of this out on the social media, so you should be able to find little bits and pieces of this. But I asked him if there was, you know, similar to what you said, Carlos, was this an issue of intensity? Was this an issue of tactics? Was there something that Lexington did that we did not prepare for adequately? And the preparation that he could point to in this case was intensity as opposed to tactics. They changed a couple of things here and there and obviously did so with the subs. But what he told me was more so that he thought that we started this game flat. This is something that we have already talked about. And Lexington obviously didn't. They beat us to all of the second balls and probably the first balls too. But they were the better team in all of those little moments. Yeah. And if that's the case, you know, sometimes you get so lucky that you end up putting three goals in before halftime. I think that there's some luck in this. Obviously, a missed penalty is pretty lucky. You know, you have to have the ability to save a penalty. I'm not saying that. But 75% plus of penalties go in. There's going to be some amount of luck involved there. So Russell Cicerone missing a penalty, you know, don't draw your pitchforks just yet, everybody. We'll hold those in reserve for a little bit longer here. But I think that if we did get that goal, that would have obviously put us in a better stead, and that would have changed things a lot more. Lexington at that point might have expected that, you know, the Rowdies are back in this game and ready to go. It took us till much later on to get back into the game, so to speak. And obviously at that point it was too far gone. So yeah, there is a consensus, at least in terms of what we're thinking and what the team seems to be thinking. I'm sure that there's more tactical stuff that they could get into that they did not want to. That's fair enough. But they did mention that they started this game too slowly as a team. And that is an issue that they can probably fix. This is an issue that we see that we saw in a couple of games last season, I would say. Maybe more than a couple of games last season. But this isn't something that we have seen a ton, specifically in 2026. I think, Carlos, you might agree with that as well. So my hope, obviously, is that if this is an issue of intensity, that's a one-off. That's easy to fix.
Yeah.
And this team has generally actually had a very good mentality, as far as we can tell from the outside. Obviously, the results do generally speak for themselves. But I think that we have, as fans, noticed a difference in the level of intensity most of the time between 2025 and 2026. Maybe we got caught in this particular game, and the coaching staff seems to agree. So let's hope that it is that one off. And I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, I suppose, until we see different, right? That makes sense for me.
Yeah. I think in like the Ralph's Mob and like Discord and the kind of sicko circles that you and I are a part of, I think I said something along the lines of like, I think you need one more game of like real, you know, awful intensity, just slow mentally type of performance like this one to start getting really concerned. Like I said, the lead's shrunk, but we still have at least a 4-point lead after everything's said and done with the games in hand that exist for Detroit and I think Indy as well. That's a nice lead in first place, like in general. Usually these things are much tighter. And unfortunately we've let kind of like the big gap we had slip away a little bit with these two losses and at home over the last few weeks. We bounced back against Brooklyn. I think we have a great opportunity to continue to build momentum this weekend against Naples, a team that is not doing too well, and that is in a division below us. After that, you go away to Loudoun, where you've had some pretty good success, with the exception of like the last couple seasons. A game that I should be at, which will be fun. And after that, you go away to Miami, who is, again, kind of like finding their rhythm a little bit, but it's still, to some extent, the Miami that we know and love, despite, you know, a better position on the table than they've had in the past. Apparently, they have the best goalie in the world in Eloy Room, and I'll never forgive him for the insane saves he pulled off against Ecuador. But the Rowdies can score 4 goals on him earlier this year, and I'm sure we can continue to do that. So I think you have 3 really winnable games over the next few weeks. A game against Naples that is for cup play, and then 2 league games away to Loudoun, away to Miami. Away games are always a little bit more difficult, but James, I think you would agree with me in saying that those are 2 games that you would want to win, and maybe by, in the case of Loudoun, a couple goals.
I would agree with that. That's correct.
Loudoun has been bad, and not bad in the same way like Lexington's been bad. Like Lexington has strung together some wins randomly over the last month or so, despite their awful start. They have talent. Loudoun does not have talent or any sort of momentum swing. They're just bad, with all due respect. Okay, so that's my tangent. I think you have winnable games to throw this one away. It's one you should have won, I think. Clearly, Lexington's turning a corner. So maybe by the end of the season, we're talking about an entirely different Lexington team, and we're like the catalyst for that.
Maybe.
We'll see. We said that about, Oakland when we drew against them earlier in the year, and they're in 4th place. So, you know, fair. I don't think we're talking about Loudoun in the next couple of weeks as a team that's turning the corner. So let's go out and win that league game. But we'll focus on Naples first, and we'll talk about Loudoun next week. James, anything else on this game? Can we just throw it away and not talk about it ever again?
I think for the sake of both of us, the sake of my voice, that's the best option.
What's up with these jerseys? I mean, two games in these jerseys, 2 losses. They're beautiful jerseys. I love them. But probably are 2 of our worst performances all year.
Not the results.
Are in those jerseys. Not great. And it's not like we're like we had that game in Brooklyn between these games, by the way, which was a great dominant performance. We have it in us. It's not like we're spiraling. You know, it's 2 home losses in a row, but not, you know, 2 or 3 losses in a row. Let's throw this one away. Let's get back on track against Naples, and we'll leave it there because just awful. It was a bad game. Throw it away. Leland, I didn't mean to thrash you too much this episode. You're one of the best defenders in the league, and I know it's an off game, for you and for everybody. Let's forget it and talk about Naples this, well, I was going to say this week, which is true, but right now. James, do you want to give me a man of the match for this one and move on?
I had trouble going with anybody who started the game and was there throughout the first half. I think that that's perfectly understandable with these circumstances. So I went through and I saw who was available to me. Pedro Dellabella came on in the second half. He had three defensive contributions, but he also took four shots while he was out there. And then one chance created. So honestly, based on what we have, that was the best that I could find. And that's what I'm going to go with. I think that he was probably a better player out on the field than the players who went off. And so his contribution was positive for me. And I would prefer to have had that second half for a lot more than we did.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a really interesting problem in that we have so much talent. The fact that Pedro is one of those players that's coming off the bench is so interesting to me, but it's like, I understand the dilemma. There's a ton of talent on the field. Cashiotto has an incredibly difficult job in deciding who steps on the field when and in what position. So, yeah, great shout. I'm going with Gino Vivi just because he got on the score sheet, opened up his Rowdies account this week. It got us back into the game momentarily. We had a glimmer of hope there for a second, and the boys were pushing up and ready to go get goal number two and three. Unfortunately, Lexington decided they wanted to get goal number four and took us out of it. So it happened in vain, but good for him to open a scoring account. I think he's got some talent off the bench that can really provide a spark when we need him. I'm curious to see what his role is going forward, but he looked really fun in his few minutes on the field. Actually, I think it was more than a few minutes. When did he get subbed in? Yeah, he came on at halftime, and he looked fun, exciting, energetic, good dribbler. It was fun to watch. So good for him, good for Vivi. He's my man of the match in this one. Let's throw this game away because I really don't think there's anything like tactically or you know, talent-wise that is super concerning in this game other than maybe the center back situation, right? Is Leland 100% fit and ready to go coming off of his injury? Is he ready to go 100% now if Brian Schaefer's out for an extended period of time? And if not, is Learman the guy that can, you know, be a big-time contributor, maybe more so than we thought? We'll see. He came on at halftime, right? Yanni Learman came on, yeah, as started the second half.
Yeah.
So maybe he's going to get more playing time than we would have thought. But I do think Leon Larcher is still one of the best defenders in the league. It feels like that's probably just a one-off for real. It looks bad. I get it. If you were at the game, like, you could tell. But, man, it's hard for me to think that, like, all of that incredible all-USL, you know, league talent just disappears or anything. One bad game. He's still coming back from injury. Let's hope he's 100%. And I think we'll be all right going forward. Okay. All the bad juju aside – let's get rid of this again. Let's bounce back against Naples. We'll talk about this game in just a second, but I'm going to throw in a shameless plug here for James, the RBLR shop, because liking, subscribing is free, but if you want to support the podcast just a little bit more and you need some new threads, you can check out the shop.rblrsports.com website. Again, shop.rblrsports.com. You can use promo code COYR for 10% off everything you find there. Some great designs to support all your Tampa Bay sports teams and support this little podcast in the process. Go get yourself some good merch. Get yourself some Rowdies RBLR sports merch and wear it out to the game this weekend against our in-state rivals, Naples, who we are officially undefeated against. Let's keep that up. James, because at 7:30, the Rowdies, Tampa Bay, host FC Naples in the USL Cup. Be there, be square, be there or be square. Get your tickets. It should be a fun game. Naples is not great. James, is that true? They've lost six straight games. And they're in 12th place in the USL League One. They didn't start off all that bad, which is surprising now when I saw that note from you, James, that they've lost six straight. I would assume that they're at the bottom of the table when I read that, but they started off pretty well. They have just apparently the wheels have fallen off and no man's land now. Again, lost six straight. Their last win was in May against Westchester, their 12th of 17 teams. They also have a league game tomorrow against the Cosmos in New Jersey. So a good bit of travel for them because, again, they're going up to New Jersey probably today, right? They have this game tomorrow.
Assumably, yeah.
Yeah, fly back immediately after, presumably. Not that it's a long trip to Tampa Bay, but it's, you know, not in Naples. Get in the bus, drive 2 hours after this travel that you just did now. It's going to be a little tiring. And they're certainly going to prioritize I don't know. I'm curious how they approach this game, James, because they can't get anything out of this game, and neither can we on paper.
Unless they score like 10 goals, then the likelihood of them moving on is low.
Yeah. So I'm fascinated by how they approach this game. But I would assume, and again, this is me assuming, so take that with a grain of salt, I guess. I would assume that they go into this game against the Cosmos tomorrow, prioritizing that over the Rowdies. Get a league win against the worst team in the league in the Cosmos at the moment. Unfortunate for them and Sebastian Guanzotti, who I love to death. And then you go into this game against the Rowdies if you're Naples, and what do you do? My inclination, like I said, is that they go all in against the Cosmos because they're going to prioritize that with a game coming up on the weekend. But I also understand that maybe they think that the Rowdies aren't going to this all that seriously, and they want to get a win on the Rowdies. They want to get on a win against, you know, kind of like the big club on this coast of Florida, right? I'm really interested to see how they come out into this game. I couldn't tell you what the difference is between their starting lineup and their bench players. Full disclosure, I don't know. I haven't watched any Naples soccer this year. I just know Carson Henderlong isn't there anymore, which is good for us. And he was our best player. And I don't think they can advance at all, James. They're on 2 points. If they win, they're on 5 points. They need to finish in second place to possibly qualify in theory. I think they have a 0% chance of moving on to the next round, if I'm doing my math right. So it's going to be an interesting game. It'll be a fun game, I think, still, and you should still be there because independent of whether we can win a cup or get league points from this game or not, it's Rowdy soccer and it's against a local rival. So bragging rights on the line. If you want to continue to establish yourself as like the biggest club on this side of Florida, then I think you should go into this game with some starters or all the starters. Get the bad juju out, right? Go score a lot of goals on this team that has conceded a decent amount of goals, to put it lightly, over the last month or so. Conceded five against Charlotte, conceded 2 against Sarasota, 4 against Charlotte again, who apparently is a goal scoring machine. They've scored 3 goals. They conceded 3 against Portland last week. They can't defend. I think this is a get right game, regardless of what it means in the table, in the USL Cup, and the lack of meaning in the league standings. I think it's a get right game. And I want us to go in there and just win 3-4-0, truly. I think we need some good juju back after this weekend's performance. Get us right for the league play again, and go kill Loudon, go kill Miami after that, and, you know, cushion our lead again before we get some of the tougher away games that I mentioned later on down the line. Okay, that being said, like I said, I still think Naples is going to come out and try and make a statement. I don't think they'll be able to, but we'll see. Another factor before I turn it over to you for your thoughts, James, another factor to keep in mind, like I said, Tampa Bay Rowdies, Orlando City tomorrow at some time in the evening that I'm not sure. It's not televised anywhere. It's not really talked about at all. I don't even think, you know, the Rowdies have acknowledged that it exists on social media or anything. I'm not sure Orlando has either. I haven't really followed them or kept up with them online. But it's like a season ticket holder friendly for them. And who knows who we take over there. My assumption would be that we just, like, don't take it seriously because it's a friendly. But James, it's also Orlando, and, you know, maybe an opportunity for the coaching staff and the players to show what they've got, you know, make a little bit of a statement in a friendly game that doesn't really mean anything, but, you know, get some eyes on you know, players from some MLS front offices and scouts or whatever. Like, I don't know. Even I'm kind of waffling at this point. I really don't know. Maybe we're throwing in some starters or a lot of starters in there tomorrow. Wednesday, July 8th. I don't know, truly. Either way, we're not going far down I-4 and then back and then at home on Saturday. So, yeah, it's a really weird one. I really don't know what to make of it. Do you have any, before you talk about Naples, do you have any thoughts on this game tomorrow against Orlando? Like, we haven't talked about it because it doesn't really exist for, you know, all intents and purposes. It's not really happening in the eyes of, like, any table, standings, points. You know what I mean? Are you okay playing this game? Is that not weird to you? I feel like we just shouldn't be happening is my initial thought in the middle of the season. But I'm curious your thoughts.
I don't think that I think it should be happening in the middle of our season. This reminds me of something that a friend of mine brings up a lot. Barcelona were on this incredible run around 2010, 2011, sometime like that. And they did a random midseason friendly in South Africa. And they lost that game because it was – actually, I don't remember if they lost that game. But the point is, afterwards, they came back and they went on this run that was a lot more negative after having, you know, gone on this incredible run beforehand. And it was just this PR stunt that nobody really understood, and it, like, kind of messed up their season. So I'm not saying that this is what we're going to do. We're not going to mess up our season because we travel down to I-4. I think that Barcelona to South Africa, A, is a lot longer. But the point stands that I don't believe midseason friendlies are a good use of time. I don't know. I've never seen one of those kind of, like, work out, so to speak. I'm not really sure why they're doing that. Honestly, if they need a midseason friendly, then they should just be playing like one of the USL League Two teams that has a little break in their schedule or something. I'm probably going to see Lakeland United this weekend. So play one of the teams that Lakeland United isn't playing on Wednesday. Yeah. That's kind of how I feel about it.
It doesn't seem like something we need. It seems it's obviously more for Orlando. It's a season ticket holder event. They just like, hey, do you want to come play a game for our season ticket holders to celebrate MLS being back after the World Cup? And I guess someone said, yeah, I wouldn't say yes. This is a tangent at this point, but to me, it seems like a lose lose for us.
Yeah.
You go out there and you play your starters. Let me put it this way. You go out there and you play a bunch of backups. I don't know. You throw in the kids, you throw in the academy guys, and you throw in a couple starters, whatever, and you lose 4-0. And it's like, okay, when we lost 4-0 to Orlando, right?
Well, the other potentiality, of course, is injuries too.
Right.
Exactly.
And then you go to, well, that's the other point, right? Let's say you put in all the starters because it's Orlando, and maybe, I don't know, maybe some of the rowdy players want to get MLS eyes on them for their own career and get some, you know, some scouts looking their way, right? You throw in the starters and they're going all in because they want to impress everybody. And then you have, like you said, an injury, right? With an already thin back line situation, whatever. There's an injury. Who cares? Like, who really? I mean, would I be happy if it comes out that we beat Orlando 1-0 or 2-0 or whatever? Like, sure. But like, it doesn't do anything for like the, is that a real match? Like, I don't know. Probably not. You know what I mean? I'm not really flexing that to an Orlando fan.
Right.
Maybe a little bit. Like a little bit, but like after the Open Cup game against them last year, I don't think I can ever flex a result to them ever again, no matter what happens.
Not for a long time.
Not for, so my point is, it feels like a lose-lose. You either go out there and you get pummeled because you're playing some reserves and backups and some kids, or you go out there to try and win with some starters and you're risking injury and you're wasting energy for a game this weekend. You know, again, not that the game this weekend matters all that much, but probably more than this one. I don't know. I have mixed feelings on it. I like that we play them because I want to beat them. I do. But this isn't a real game. It doesn't mean anything, right? Whatever. We talked about this for a while, how much I dislike that club. But, man, we're not in a position to talk too much smack ever again after last year. Yeah. They live rent-free in my head. I don't think I'll ever get over that game. That was awful.
Yep, I agree.
Back to good vibes, because this has been a negative vibes podcast. Back to good vibes. Regardless of what happens tomorrow, I really don't care all that much, because we're playing a game this weekend that's actually televised and in theory matters more than that. We're playing Naples, local rival. James, I'll just jump into my prediction really quickly and tell you that I think we should win this one 2-0. And probably should win more than that, by more than that. But it just feels like a comfortable bounce back win. Professional, go get your two goals and go home. And then go take care of business against Loudon the following week. We should win comfortably. I hope we take it seriously enough to understand that it's a great opportunity to get rid of any bad vibes from last week. What about you? What are you thinking?
I am also thinking a win. I said that earlier, and I am going with a 3-0 win, actually. I think that Naples run, yeah, they are going to come out here with a little bit more fire probably than the Rowdies might, but it seems to me that there is a difference in form as well as a difference in quality, probably. Let's just be real about that. So, yeah, 3-0 to the Rowdies. Producer Eureka is joining us on the win column with a 3-1 win prediction. Both Parker and Connor, our writers, have gone with a 1-1 draw. However, both of them have also picked the Rowdies to win on penalties. Remember, there are no extra time periods in the USL Cup. So it would go straight to penalties.
Yeah.
I think that does it for our predictions, at least.
Yeah. And for just to reiterate, we already clinched first place in this group. We're into the knockout rounds of the Prince Tires Cup. There's no benefit to like finishing with more points or less points at this point. If you're in first place, you're in first place. The draw for who you play next is random. The home and away assignment is randomized. It's a random draw. There's really no benefit in going out and saying like you have to win by 5 or you have to win. You know what I mean? Like just go out there and perform. Make it a good bounce back game. I'd rather win by like a number of goals and have to go to penalties, but also, I wouldn't mind some penalty practice in like a competitive game either. That would be
that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't had to do, you know, a ton of penalty shootouts in my time as a Rowdies fan, but you never know when that might happen in the knockout rounds of the playoffs or in the Prince Tires Cup. Okay, cool. Let's go kill Naples and I guess let's go kill Orlando tomorrow, but it's not like you can even watch anywhere. I know there's a few sickos that somehow got tickets for that game and like are going wearing Rowdies gear, which is like, you know, kudos to you, all the best. Like I love the hater mentality and supporting this club wherever they are and whatever game they play, whoever it is that they're actually putting on the field. Love it. Go out there, be safe, rep, and let's see what happens tomorrow. But more importantly, let's see what happens on Saturday and going forward. Tons of season left. Let's bounce back and forget that game against Hartford and then that game against Lexington in particular ever happened. Speaking of games that we would like to forget, let's talk about the World Cup, James, just a little bit here. I think the highlight, the story is the U.S. national team. Of course, we're a podcast based in the United States of America, and I love the U.S. men's national team as much as anyone else. It was a heartbreaking way to go out. I'm sure you were watching too, James. I'm sure you're as passionate as I am about this. Just a wasted opportunity was my takeaway. Like I know, and Eureka is lurking in the background, and we were talking about this before about whether we felt that the U.S. like met expectations, so to speak, right? Of like what a successful World Cup or like what the standard for, you know, a U.S. performance in the World Cup should be. And I think we could say they met like the standard, right? Like the standard being like kind of like the bare minimum. That's how I felt, right? James, you could disagree with me if you want, but I felt that with the group we had, you were expected to finish in first place in the group. After that, we'll reevaluate when we get the matchups, but in theory, you're getting a pretty light matchup if you finished in first place. And you did. You got Bosnia, who was not great, and you went out there and you played really, really well against them. And then you get the next matchup being Belgium. And that's when you start to think, okay, if you beat Belgium, you're into the quarterfinals, you beat finally like one of the, you know, the good European squads in the round of 16, you make it past that incredibly difficult round of 16. And I think you can call it an incredibly successful World Cup at that point, regardless of what happens against who would have been after that.
Spain.
Would have been a successful World Cup 100%. I think now you're successful. I think maybe it's just too soon to call it that. Even if you want to argue it is, it doesn't feel successful right now. It just feels like the bare minimum was met, which was fine, right? But it just feels like a missed opportunity. We went out like awfully. We weren't scrappy about it. We looked bad. And by the end of the game, the boys looked just like, I don't know, tapped out, you know? The comparison to like the way we went out against Belgium in 2014 was stark, You know, the 2014 squad took it all the way to overtime. Tim Howard just played, stood on his head, had the game of his life, obviously broke all the records for saves in the game. That squad just had so much heart. You know what I mean? Not that these boys don't, but it just didn't feel that way yesterday. You know what I mean? And I think when you have the most eyes the U.S. national team has ever had live on a game, to go out like that, I think is an incredibly, incredibly huge wasted opportunity for the sport in this country. They did the job, right? Like, more people are talking about soccer than they have been probably ever, right? Are you going to keep them around? Probably not, right? Like, how much of that excitement that happened from the group stage into the game against Bosnia, how much of that does that carry into your local team? In this case, the Rowdies, right? I think that's a good gauge for success, right? Do you see a little bit of a, you know, community engagement, right? The Rowdies, the USA watch parties at the stadium were pretty good crowds, right? Do those people that have never been to a game before see the Rowdy stadium and be like, wow, that's a nice place. Like, maybe we should come watch soccer here after the excitement we had from watching the USA games here. Like, do you see a little bump in attendance? Do you see more people in the community engaging with their local team? Not just the Rowdies, but Naples, Sarasota, right? Hell, Orlando, right? If everybody is like engaging a little bit more with their local team, maybe we can call it a success. It just feels like we needed a marquee win, which would have been Belgium. I don't think we got that against anybody else, truly, this World Cup. We needed like that famous marquee win to call it a great success, to call it a World Cup that got more people into soccer. And I don't know if we did that. I don't know. Time will tell, really. I think it's too soon to really see if it did what we wanted it to do for the sport in the country. It might have. I'm not sure it did. That's just like, you know, the macro take on it. The game itself, I haven't even talked about it, but that's more important for me than even anything else, is like the big picture for soccer in this country. The game itself, ugly. We were out from the beginning, whatever. But the way we went out, I think, didn't do us any favors in terms of like what we wanted this tournament to do for this country. It's been great. The tournament as a whole has been great. And the U.S. has been fun to watch through the group stage against Bosnia. Like, I don't think those good vibes just disappear. I think you probably get some more people paying attention. Definitely got more people paying attention. They have record viewership for USA games and everything. Probably helps that it's in our time zone finally, right? But I feel like it could have been a little bit, like, could have been more. You know what I mean? I don't know. That's kind of where my thoughts are on that.
Yeah, anybody who knows, I've said this one or two places, and I will probably say it one or two more. I went into this World Cup mostly focused on Scotland. Scotland is the first and foremost team I support in international soccer. Unfortunately, that didn't go well either. And the U.S., actually, like, drew me in a lot more. Of course, I was going to, you know, watch all of their games. I was watching every game that I could. That's how I take in the World Cup. But when Scotland went out, it was more like a drip, drip, drip every day as the odds went down and down and down, because the results from other groups came in and made it harder and harder for them to move on. And last night, obviously, excuse me, it was a big blow all at once to see the U.S. go out. But they had drawn me back in because they were doing so well. The 4-1 win, that was a great performance from everybody on the field. Truly, like, Pulisic has never, a lot of people will talk about, you mentioned, you know, we don't have a signature win this group. Pulisic doesn't have a signature performance. Like, when people think of Landon Donovan's career, they think of him scoring against Algeria in the last minute in 2010. Yeah. That is a moment in stoppage time. They needed a goal or they weren't going to go through. Not only did they get the goal, they won the game. They got the points. They topped the group and they moved on. Unfortunately, they ran into Ghana and whatever, but this group doesn't have that. And Christian Pulisic doesn't have that, because just as you said, I think that they won that first game, which was so good. They did well against Australia. It wasn't quite the same level. to be fair, I think Paraguay got in their own heads in the middle of the first game. I think that that was something that they did to themselves even more. The last one against Turkey, whatever, you know, that's almost a write-off.
Yeah.
They did the bare minimum, you're right, by beating Bosnia. Bosnia, it's not like it's an easy game, but it is a game that the U.S. is expected to win.
Yeah.
In this particular game, a Belgium team right now, not only would it be a signature win for multiple reasons, we have a history against them specifically in the round of 16. Tim Howard's greatest ever day, 16 saves. But the Benelux, or well, I guess just the Benel countries, the Belgium and the Netherlands, they have knocked us out now of the last three men's World Cup round of 16 matches. So this could have been a signature win. This could have been the one. I think Christian Pulisic was some type of injured because he was obviously just brutal to watch out there.
He looked so bad.
And yeah. Serginho Dest, Matt Freese had some of their worst games. Both, in this case, both Scotland and the U.S. unfortunately saved their worst games for last and obviously doomed themselves in the process. But yes, the larger issue here is not just that the U.S. had a bad game and when it was. You're right. The numbers for every single game went up and up and up, because they drew people in. I am a fan of the U.S. national team, but I am a larger fan of Scotland. And so I personally had to kind of be drawn back in, so to speak. And I truly was. It was good to see that there were so many giant groups of people watching all of these games. They watched the Paraguay game. More people watched the Australia game. I guess I don't know about the Turkey game. It was probably very large, but a lot of people watched the Bosnia game. And I can imagine what the numbers were when this game against Belgium started. I bet it was a number that we have never seen before in terms of soccer in this country. And that sucks in a lot of ways, because I want the sport to be bigger. The women have done a lot more. They could, you know, we could get bigger audiences for those games, what have you. There are all of these different things that are going into this, but everybody knows this was going to be, and almost certainly was, the most watched ever U.S. soccer game, whether that is men's or women's or any other kind of thing, possibly including Premier League and other World Cup finals. I don't know that, but definitely with the U.S. involved, this was going to be the most watched ever. And if they won that game, that would have guaranteed a quarterfinal matchup against Spain on Friday, which would have surely been the new record holder afterwards. To have your worst possible game in that moment, it was them not being able to handle the pressure, in my opinion. And you could see it on the field, the way how poorly they were playing, all of the giveaways, all of the bad touches, all of the moments, the first goal, when it was just a ball that was up in the air and nobody reacted to it. I mean, it was just all of these things are I was sitting next to somebody who was pointing out over and over that these are schoolboy errors, and they are. It sucks that that was the moment that had to happen, because they did. It was a chance when more eyes were on the sport than ever before. And you could have had that signature moment. You could have had that signature win, that signature performance. You could have had that moment that the whole country was like, oh shit, maybe we are good at soccer. I don't pay attention any other time, but maybe we actually are. Now I will pay attention a little bit more. And like you said, maybe we'll get those people who actually start to pay attention to go to games in their local community, because that's how you build soccer. It is at the grassroots level. You don't generally get to bring in high value transfers for a national team, right? Every so often we'll get Malik Tillman to switch his nationality, what have you. But the way that you do that is grassroots, and the way that you build the grassroots is you build interest. And this was the chance to do so, and that they fucked that up really fucking sucks. Really fucking sucks. Eureka, sorry, threw that out there. But that
do we bleep stuff out on the podcast? I don't know if we bleep stuff out. I think it's fine.
But it was a real head in hands moment for me, a fan, not a player, because that was a chance to do something. That was a chance to do something that they're not going to have. I don't think they're going to have that chance even in 2030, because it will just be farther away. It's even if the national team makes it to the round of 16 and they play Belgium again and they win, you know, are we going to have the same audience? I don't know. I don't think so, because it won't be on U.S. soil. If the U.S. women's national team win next year, they won't have the same audience. And that sucks, but it's true.
Yeah.
They had an opportunity here to do something that they will probably not have an opportunity to do again. And there are a lot of people who don't tune in even every 4 years. They tuned in because it is in America, and those people will not be back. So that's why it was such a bummer for me. And I would throw a lot more F-bombs in here, but I've already made Eureka's night hard enough. So that's where my voice is. That's where my head is. Scotland, I kind of expected that, to be fair. We getting out of the group was going to be a miracle on its own. But the U.S., man, when they legitimately did draw me back in as a fan to watching these games and starting to worry about how things are going and everything, and the worst performance again on the biggest stage, that's what really hurts. That's what really
the
hurts.
The lights were too bright, James. By the way, Fox said that the audience peaked at more than 36.8 million people during the broadcast on Fox. And that's not counting the Spanish viewing numbers,
right,
on Telemundo,
right,
which I'm sure were extravagant as well. For comparison, NBA finals between the Knicks and the Spurs last month averaged 20.6 million viewers on ABC and ESPN. To reiterate, it peaked at 36.8 million for the U.S. men's national team round of 16 against Belgium. And NBA finals were peaking at 20.6 on average. Granted, games are spread out. It's a series, but I think that's an interesting comparison that ESPN threw in their article that I just pulled up. Super Bowl numbers are another beast that I don't think soccer will ever surpass in this country, but incredible, incredible. Also, fun fact, the most watched combined U.S. audience numbers during the World Cup before this Monday night's game last night was the Mexico-Ecuador game with 29.3 million viewers.
Nice.
Interesting.
Nice.
Ugly game for me.
Kind of surprised it wasn't the Mexico-England game.
Yeah, it's interesting. Which was also an incredible game, by the way.
Yes, it was.
So that sucks. U.S., unfortunate. Missed opportunity, I think, is kind of like the headline here. But again, I mean, there was so much unity, so much excitement for a good amount of time here that I think brought in more people. Is it as many people as maybe we would have liked to see join our incredible circle of soccer sickos? Probably not. Probably
is it not as many people as we could have had if we were playing on Friday?
No, yeah, exactly. Probably not. But regardless, I think the tournament did the job of getting people excited. Regardless of if it's the U.S., people are still watching soccer and watching games between countries they've never heard of and packing out stadiums. I mean, the game I went to, Czechia versus South Africa, was sold out in Atlanta. Like, are you kidding me? Group stage game against Czechia and South Africa. Incredible. I think the tournament's done its job, and I think the U.S. men's national team, to a certain extent, did their job. Got people excited. They won the games they were supposed to win, and then they lost the game that they were probably supposed to lose. You know, to that extent, you could say they met the expectations, but the way they went out was ugly. Unfortunate, happens. But again, I think there's a lot of excitement still. I like the Stu Holden and what's the other commentator's name?
John Strong.
Their sign off kind of towards the end of the game. If you were listening on the English broadcast on Fox Sports, it was a message of, you don't have to not watch soccer again for 4 years. Like, if you're watching this and you've enjoyed the U.S.'s run, you enjoyed the World Cup. John Strong said, if you've enjoyed what you're seeing, support your local team. This doesn't have to be the last soccer you watch for the next 4 years. It's a beautiful sport. Stu Holden adds, the future of American soccer is very bright. They said that live on the broadcast. You've probably heard that a lot at the end of the U.S. World Cup runs over the last 12 years. Maybe you've tuned out at that part out at this point. I choose to believe that it is true, though. You know what I mean? regardless of the missed opportunity here at home, I think it's true. I mean, the talent's there. These guys, the guys on the field were show like perfect a representation of like America, which I loved. I mean, you have the guys that were born in America with the Hispanic last names, the Mexican Americans. You have guys that grew up in the Bronx. You got guys that were, you know, like Balogun that were born here and raised somewhere else. Like it was pinnacle Americana for me, right? That's what made this team, I think, so likable too. It's just like where everybody came from, the unity of them as a team representing America. Like, I think it was beautiful. Everybody getting behind them around the country. Like there's been so much division, James, obviously in the world. And I think for a few weeks, we were like this as a country and it was pretty cool. And I'm not going to forget that for a long time. I thought it was a really special feeling and I held on to that for a long time and I loved it. So regardless of how we went out against Belgium yesterday, it was a special, special, special moment in U.S. soccer history because it was on our turf and we won some games and it was fun. So shout out to the U.S. men's national team. Shout out soccer. The World Cup's still going on. There's still great games going on and I've had a great time watching. And we still have a great local team to watch, James, the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Go out to the game this weekend. Listen to Stu Holden and John Strong. Get out to your local team. Bring your friends. Like, and who knows if we're an hour and 1 minute into this podcast, maybe you're tuned out by this point. But I'll reiterate the John Strong message: like, capitalize on the excitement that soccer has in this country because it's there. Like, you've seen it. People are talking about it. Your friends that have never talked about soccer in your life are talking to you about soccer and the game yesterday and the game this afternoon between Argentina and Egypt. Like, people are talking about that. Bring them to a Rowdies game. Like, they'll fall in love with the sunset and the supporter section that they've never seen before. And the view, like, it's beautiful. Take advantage. Do your part for the Rowdies. Bring a friend out. Okay, James. That's my going home message. That's really all I can say. It's emotional. Like, I love the U.S. I love the U.S. men's national team. I love soccer in this country. And I love what we're building, like, as a fan base in Tampa Bay. Let's keep it up. You know, the team's doing well. Let's capitalize on the energy of soccer in this country right now and bring people out there. Yep. Let's do our part. Okay. Anything else we should talk about?
I'm spent. One more peek behind the curtains. I really did not feel up for recording today for obvious reasons, but I am out of words at this point for where soccer is. And I just gotta wait and pick myself back up a little bit here.
I think, you know what? I think the conclusion is it's still trending up, still trending in a positive direction, just maybe not as quickly as we would have liked.
Certainly, so yeah.
Let's take the good progress that we still have and run with it. Thank you for listening. It's been fun, regardless of the results. I always enjoy venting soccer here. Rowdies have a great chance to bounce back this weekend. Take advantage, be there. Follow at RBLR Sports on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Threads, anywhere you get your doom scrolling, we are there. You can follow me at CarlosTPA10 on X.com. James, where can folks follow you?
People can also follow me on Twitter at RBLR James K.
Like I said, follow the podcast, engage with us. We'd like to hear what you got to say. Incredible time for soccer in this country. You can be sad about the game yesterday, but get back on your horse and get to the game on Saturday and do your part to keep building the game here. Let's get excited. Like and subscribe to the podcast. Get the full experience on YouTube. See our faces and how sad we look. And follow us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Where you get your podcasts, we are there. Tell your friends. Listen to the Rowdies. Listen to RBLR Sports. Go to the Rowdies game this weekend and support your team against the evil invaders from Naples. James, World Cup still going on. Before we sign off, who's winning?
I if it's not France, I just don't know what's going on.
France looks insane. I'm rooting for Norway the rest of the way. That's my sign off for one more week of Rowdy soccer and for the game this weekend. Let's get after it. Get out to Al Lang. Come on, you Rowdies.
Come on, you Rowdies.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.